So today we're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 3, The Glories of Devotional Service, text number 15. Chaitaha Kalu Asya Bandhaya Muktaye Cha Atmanaha Matam Guneshu Saktam Vandhaya Ratam Va Pumsi Muktaye Chaitakalvasya Vandhaya Muktaye Chatmanomatam Guneshu Saktam Vandhaya Tamva Pumsi Muktaye Teta Kalvasya Bandhaya Muktaye Chatmanomatam Guneshu Saktam Bandhaya Tamva Pumsi Muktaye Teta Kalvasya Bandhaya Muktiye chatmanomatam Guneshu saktam bandhaya Ritamva pumsi muktaye Chaitaha Consciousness Halu Indeed Asya Of him Bandhaya For bondage Muktaye For liberation. Cha. And. Atmanaha. Of the living entity. Matam. Is considered. Guneshu. In the three modes of nature. Saktam. Attracted. Bandhaya. For conditional life. Ratam. Attached. Va. Or. Pumsi, in the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Muktaye, for liberation. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace Srila A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Translation. The stage in which the consciousness of the living entity is attracted by the three modes of material nature is called conditional life. But when that same consciousness is attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is situated in the consciousness of liberation. Please repeat. The stage in which the consciousness of the living entity is attracted by the three modes of material nature is called conditional life. But when that same consciousness is attached to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one is situated in the consciousness of liberation. Purport. There is a distinction here between Krishna consciousness and Maya consciousness. Guneshu, or Maya consciousness, involves attachment to the three material modes of nature, under which one works sometimes in goodness and knowledge, sometimes in passion, and sometimes in ignorance. These different qualitative activities, with the central attachment for material enjoyment, are the cause of one's conditional life. When the same chaitaha, or consciousness, is transferred to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, or when one becomes Krishna conscious, he is on the path of liberation. Om Gyanatimi Randasya Gyanjana Shalakaya Chakshur Mitam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Karamayam Dadati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yuta Parakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Cha, Shri Rupam Sagatam Sagna Raghunatham Vitam Tam Sujivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Purijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Padam Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitam Cha Hey Krishna, Kuna Sindhu, Dina Bantu, Jagapate, Gopesha, Gopika, Kanta, Radha, Kanta, Namosute, Tapta Kanchana, Goranki, Radhe, Vrindavaneshwari, Vrishabhanu, Sute, Devi, Panamami, Hari, Priya, Panchakalpa, Truvischa, Kripa, Sindhu, Pevicha, Patitanam, Pavnebhyo, Vaishnavebhyo, Namo Namaha, Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shrivasadi Gaura Bhaktivinda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Namo Vishupraya Krishna Sankutane Srimati Paladananda Swami Itinamane Namaste Sarasati Dev Gaura Vamcharani Nirvishesha Shunyavadi Pasitata Deshatarani chapter 25, Canto 3. We find that pretty much the majority of the verses that Srila Prabhupada lectured on in Canto 3 are from this chapter. So it's very fortunate for people giving class. When we give class, I think we want to, of course, shouldn't be consider it old-fashioned or something to stick to finding out what Prabhupada said about a particular verse. And if we have that opportunity to hear those lectures, then should take that. And at the same time, as Prabhupada explains in Canto 1, that there needs to be this realization, like we have the theory of what's in the books, Prabhupada's purports, and then what have we understood from, you know, from our practice of devotional service, what have we understood about what Prabhupada's saying, and etc. So there's that balance there. Yeah, Prabhupada did lecture on this verse. Actually, I'm not sure what city he was in. But so Prabhupada explaining that there's the two words in this verse, bandhaya and muktaya, so for bondage and for liberation. And basically, it's only, you know, persons who are ignorant don't understand that basic distinction or that, you know, that concept of bondage and liberation. That there's no idea of getting liberated from life. So Prabhupada says this is just like animal consciousness, that a dog or something is in a dog body, and it has no idea that it's in bondage, that it's in suffering. So similarly, anyone who doesn't have a concept of attaining liberation from this material bondage, their consciousness is on the level of an animal, unfortunately. So devotees are trying to, you know, enlighten people about that. So, you know, this is actually the purpose of human life. Actually, no other animal, no other species has that access to the knowledge of how to become liberated. So that's a great opportunity that we're in. And so we need to take advantage of that by seeing that that is the prime purpose of our life, is to attain Krishna consciousness or liberation from that material bondage. And then make everything revolve around that, like Prabhupada gives the example of the bull walking around a central post and grinding, stepping on grains, etc. And so they're going around and around. And for most people, that central pole is their household life, material household life. There's just the family, there's raising the kids, there's making money, there's relatives, there's holidays, and all that's there pretty much, all the same things are there for a devotee. But there's actually all of those things actually in connection to Krishna. So the central pole is Krishna, and all those other things revolve around Krishna consciousness and not just, you know, economic development for the sake of it, which is everyone's consciousness nowadays. That, you know, anytime topics about the economy come up, then it's big news. It's like, you know, there's the monthly or however often they have meetings with the government to set the interest rates. And that's like big news because everyone has mortgages and affects the whole cash flow of the economy. And, you know, what's the American Federal Reserve doing? It's going to affect the whole world. And what's the central bank in some other country doing? So it's just economic consciousness. No Krishna consciousness. So it can be hard even for devotees to understand this basic example that Prabhupada gives, that Krishna is supplying to the elephants and to the ants. You know, so many tons of food to the elephants and a few grains of sugar to the ants. And, you know, even we can get into that consciousness because everyone else is in that consciousness. We can get into that consciousness of, you know, working very hard and forgetting that Krishna is maintaining us. So that's the challenge for us to, you know, realize these things, realize that Krishna is actually looking after me. So then Prabhupada's explaining that in this age there's no qualified brahmanas because we have to, you know, we have to perform sacrifice. Sacrifice, that's the means for attaining that liberation, is to engage in sacrifice. But there's no actual brahmanas in this age, as Prabhupada explains, that no one can ignite a fire just by mantra. No one can, you know, give a new body to an animal if it gets sacrificed in the fire, which is what, you know, the system that was there, that animals would sometimes be sacrificed in the fire, not just so that they could be eaten, but to prove the efficacy of the Vedic mantras, that they could, so potent, like even just on a material level, that the mantras are so powerful that they can give a whole new body to an animal. You know, people try to do that by surgery and so on nowadays. They try to regenerate their bodies, but that was possible by mantras. And so, yeah, no one can properly recite the mantras. You know, there's examples in Bhagavatam of people improperly reciting mantras, and instead of killing, instead of cursing one person, then their own son is killed. So it's a real, actually, science of reciting mantras. So therefore, Prabhupada explains that these kind of yagyas are prohibited in Kali Yuga. So when I heard Prabhupada say this, I immediately thought of sometimes Gangesha Prabhu has discussed about this, that, you know, people all the time, devotees all the time come up to him and say, Prabhu, why are you doing yagyas? This is prohibited in Kali Yuga. It's not the method, you have to just do sankirtan. This is what Prabhupada said in this lecture, that only sankirtan yoga is authorized, chanting the holy names and worshipping the Supreme Lord in that way, to chant and distribute prasadam. So actually the way that yagyas are done at the temple, or the way that Gangesha performs them, he's not doing them like people, you know, he says people, sometimes they ask for like, oh, can you get mango leaves for the yagya and this particular type of wood for the fire and so many technicalities and this and that, and it has to be proper. Otherwise, if you don't have all these things, it's not proper. And he says, no, it's not necessary. I don't like, doesn't maybe say it like that to them, but those things are just, because it's true, yogas are not effective in this age. So those things are less important, like you know, they're just for show. So actually what the real thing is when Prabhu does yogas is he reads a verse from Bhagavad Gita and gets the participants, guests, to chant Hare Krishna. And, you know, they walk around the fire chanting. So he's engaging them in sankirtan. So that it's just like we do yoga classes at Urban Yoga. It's just a gateway. It's just an access point to get people in the door. So it's the same way people get attracted, oh, this person does yoga, so let's do so many pujas. And it's just an access so that they can come, as well as chanting, maybe they have an opportunity to meet a devotee, have a conversation with a devotee, then they take prasadam. So we're just creating access points for people to come in contact with the Hare Krishna movement. So even though, you know, Prabhupada's very explicit saying, you know, you can't do, yagyas are not the way in this age, but still we do them just to engage people, and we understand that, we accept that, but to engage people in the real process, the real sankirtan, the real yagya, sankirtan, so we might do other things. So, because Prabhupada is explaining that Kali Yuga, there's so many things faulty. So this is one reason why yogis are not recommended, that they're not, there's no purity, but there's no qualified brahmanas. And the Bhagavatam describes that there's three things that will happen. There's the predictions in Canto 12. Of what will happen in Kali Yuga. And firstly, there will be no rainfall. And not only that, it's such a teasing, like a punishment, that there will be no rainfall. But even though there will be thunder clouds, there will be thunder, there will be lightning, but there will be no rain. So I was like, it's like looking very ominous. Oh wow, maybe this, you know, the drought is going to break, and this is you know, Australia has all the time has droughts, and we think it's just natural. Like people grow up in Australia or somewhere that has very extreme weather conditions, and you think it's just normal. Oh yeah, we get droughts, we get floods, but it's not normal. It's in Pariksit Maharaj's time. Everything was, nature was very nicely functioning, it would just rain at night time. and so that the plants could grow. It wouldn't rain during the daytime and kind of disturb everyone. So the droughts and all these extreme weather conditions are just due to reactions to people's sinful actions. In Kali Yuga there'll be no rainfall, no food grains, because if there's no rain, there's no grains. And then government taxes, people, the governments, as Prabhupada says, are actually not, they're not qualified leaders. They're not, kshatriyas who are trained in Vedic science, Vedic knowledge. They're just rogues and thieves, and they're imposing taxes on us to get more, line their own pockets. Australia's, relatively less corrupt than other countries, but it's very obvious in many countries of the world. It's just like, my God, they're just, it's called nepotism, when the government, or they put all their family members in the high positions in the government, and they get so much material comfort, so much luxury cars, luxury houses, and the people are suffering. Their own citizens, who they're meant to be looking after, are just poverty stricken, and there's a few elite in the government just living the life materially. They're still going to die. So they'll have to suffer for that. They'll get their karmic reactions. But this is the character of Kali Yuga. And then Bhagavatam also gives predictions about what will happen, because people are so harassed by this situation of having government impose so many heavy taxes unnecessarily, then people will leave to the forest, and it's just easier to, even though such austerity, to, live very simply in the forest, eating berries and having simple shelter. Still, people would be so harassed that they'd think that's better than how I was living in the city. And then another prediction Bhagavatam makes about Kali Yuga, which we see coming true, is that there'll be no marriage. People just maybe don't want to get married. They'll still have relationships, they'll still have illicit connections, but they just want the enjoyment. They don't want the commitment, the marriage. I travel on public transport a lot, and I was just traveling home late on a train, and you just hear young people, and it just came up. They're like, I met one of my ex partners at this and this nightclub or something. So it's like, and just teenagers, they have multiple boyfriends and girlfriends. Like, by the end of year 12, they would have had, three boyfriends or girlfriends already. And it's every time there's attachment forms in the heart. And so then marriage, it's like, the idea of commitment, committing to one person, is quite foreign to Western people. In that kind of, situation. But then, in the Vedic system, when the girls were protected by their fathers, then when they wanted to get married, then they were ready to give themselves to one person for life. So that's quite a different scenario. And Prabhupada explains that, also in Vedic times, the people would consult the horoscopes. And he actually states that without that coincidence of the horoscope, the matching, and, without seeing through that prediction that, oh, okay, this this boy and this girl, they will live very happily together. Then without that there, then they wouldn't get married. So it's a bit different attitude some devotees have nowadays that, oh, you know, horoscopes or astrology, it's secondary, it's not so necessary. But, you know, because marriage is really a material arrangement. It's not particularly spiritual. So, you know, it's dealing with people's minds. Astrologists is looking at people's mental characteristics and so on. So even if people are devotees, we're not so elevated in our spiritual consciousness. We've got a lot of material consciousness which needs to be taken into consideration. So just seeing, oh, this person's a good devotee, it's not actually enough to say that they will be a good match or not. And so, you know, the consciousness nowadays, Prabhupada says, is I like you and you like me, so that's okay. That's fine. That's the qualification. So, you know, it takes a lot of, takes guidance. Parents would usually help their children and, you know, from my own experience, I was not ready to enter a relationship when I did. And, you know, now I see that it has to be done much more carefully. And, you know, following a proper process and, you know, if people have the assistance of their parents, then they're fortunate. Or the assistance of senior devotees, and that's fortunate, and that needs to be there in our Krishna conscious communities, because it's a big, you know, samskara in people's life, a big, you know, break or like event that if someone gets married. So, you know, we want to do it. We want to serve devotees in that way, make it work for them. And even when devotees are married, it's not like that's the end of the game. And, you know, devotees will need help at every step of their Krishna conscious lives. And the other prediction Bhagavatam makes, also the consciousness in this age that the husband's and the wife's relationship, it just means sex. That's the only meaning in their life. You know, or sex or material enjoyment. So there's no higher spiritual purpose of the relationship. And, you know, we see that people just have their consciousness of their families. So, as Prabhupada, you know, told one of the people, devotees tell a story about Prabhupada that when people come and see him and say, these are my grandchildren, this is my cousins and so on and so on. And Prabhupada explains that they're just glorifying their sex life. So, you know, Prabhupada, he can speak very straight. Like, we can't always do that. But, so the other prediction Bhagavatam makes is that long hair will equal beauty. People have this idea that if I grow my hair long, and at that time, when the movement started, then that was prevalent, that in the hippie movement. And it seems to be making a revival, like people are growing their beards long. It's very, very common. Actually, I have a half-brother who's much older. He's like in his 50s or something. And he's always had a very long beard. But, you know, when I was growing up, that was really unfashionable. That was like, he was this old guy who had a big beard, and it's just like, you know, it was not attractive to people. And now it's kind of the fashion amongst young people, and so it's like my half-brother who's much older must be thinking like, oh no, now people are finally catching up to me. And so maybe there seems to be some kind of revival of hippie culture or something. It's just beard at the moment. I don't know if we'll get to long hair. But it's good for devotees, like people in... there's a lot more interest in natural living. There's so much huger market for organic products and, you know, natural therapies, natural medicine, all these things, which is kind of, you know, it can fit in well with Krishna conscious lifestyle. So it's something we can take advantage of. So the point of this verse is to attain liberation by being attached to Krishna. And otherwise, we're working under the three modes of material nature. I thought it was interesting that whatever mode is there, goodness or passion or ignorance, then the material world means you're working. You're like, you got to work, you got to struggle to maintain your existence. You know, the struggle for existence is there, whichever mode of nature we're under. And it's like a daily, you know, moment-to-moment battle. You know, the weather's testing us and our body's testing us and always threatening us with ultimately death. So Prabhupada is explaining that we have to, as Bhagavad Gita explains, jama mitru dra vyahi dukkha doshanu darshanam, you have to have the vision, this is how I'm suffering. You know, I'm attaining repeated birth and death in so many species of life, suffering so many diseases, and eventually everyone has to experience old age. So it's so much unpleasant situations that we have to experience. And that verse comes under one of the items of knowledge. So knowledge, an item of knowledge is to have the vision, dosha or anudarshanam, of the faults of this world. Birth and death, old age and disease. And if people don't see that, then they're just lost in, as this verse is describing, Maya consciousness. So, you know, Lord Brahma, Prabhupada explains, he lives for millions of years, but his millions of years is just 12 hours for us, half one day. So Lord Brahma, he was born from a lotus flower. He took birth. So everyone in this world takes birth. So then it's explained when this consciousness, our consciousness, is transferred to the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, then one becomes Krishna conscious and we're on the path of liberation. So Prabhupada was explaining in this lecture that there's so many things that we can do in Krishna consciousness, starting with hearing and chanting and honouring prasadam. And my experience recently has been that, you know, it's very easy to fall out of Krishna consciousness. And I was talking to a friend yesterday, Fabian Prabhu, who's in Netherlands now, and he has, you know, if we're not coming to a temple regularly, I've moved away a bit from the temple, I'm closer to my work and so on. So in that situation, then we have to make our living environment Krishna conscious and put the energy into having a Krishna conscious environment, making our living space like a temple. It was last week that I moved house, and I really wasn't organized. I hadn't really packed my stuff, and then I borrowed my housemate's car. So it ended up being a very late move because I didn't have the car in the daytime. My housemate came back in the evening, and during the day I hadn't finished chanting. So then I moved house, and it became very late. And it was, surprised me, but I didn't finish my chanting for that day. So I wanted to, I was a bit hesitant to say that in class, but I thought, no, we've got to be, for myself, I want to have honesty in my relationships, with devotees and with everyone. And, if we can't reveal our minds honestly to devotees, then where's the, that's a loving exchange. So we need to be able to have that amongst devotees. So that happened. I didn't complete my rounds that day. It was, all my fault. Got very disorganized and kind of distracted by so many other things and wasn't placing Krishna first, wasn't placing Krishna in the center. And actually, I still need to catch up, because once you fall behind, it's a very slippery situation, because 16 rounds every day is a big commitment. It's like at least maybe 2 hours of your time, quality time, if you want to make it attentive as well. And so then you add every day 16 rounds. So then just to, what to speak of catching up on dropped rounds, then that's, maybe you're adding 2.5, 3 hours or something. So today, fortunately, I have a day off, and so I get the chance to chant about 34 rounds. So that's the truth. And so it was just very interesting experience for me. It's kind of, we can go through all the externals of devotional service. I walk in here before class, offer obeisances, say, prayer to the Vaishnavas when we bow down in the temple room, go over to Prabhupada, offer our obeisances, go to the deity, offer our obeisances, bow down before Tulsi Dev. All these need to be done, but in a sense, they have to become internalized, have a mood of, I am offering obeisances. And although, Prabhupada said, even if you don't feel like doing it, just do it anyway, then the feeling will come. And so, for a lot of the time, it can just be external. We're doing it just out of duty. We're doing it to look good amongst the other devotees. I'm doing everything right. But then when we're in a different situation, when we're sort of away from devotees, we're away from the temple, then it can, become revealed what is our actual state of consciousness. So I kind of found out how easy it is to get affected by Maya and, not fulfill on vows that we've taken to chant 16 rounds, which is the most important practice for us. So, it was good. I mean, for now I feel it's good. I felt some more humility. Because when we're chanting Hare Krishna, actually, as this chapter is called, the glories of devotional service, so chanting is actually not a mechanical thing, we're just repeating a mantra, but it's actually glorifying the holy name, Radha and Krishna. It's not about, let me chant and try to remember the form of Krishna. Just hear and chant, and if we're pure enough, then that... And if Krishna desires, then that rupa, form, qualities and pastimes can come, but there's no necessity of jumping over. And we just have to hear attentively and glorify that, Hare Krishna, that this is the divine couple, and just glorifying, being in that mood of glorifying. And at the same time, understanding our own position as very, very, very infinitesimal, insignificant, as it's described in the second chapter of Bhagavad Gita, that, if you take one little hair out of your head and split it, into 100 pieces. It's inconceivable. And then again take that 1/100th of a hair and again split it in somehow or other into another 100 pieces. So therefore that's the measurement that the Vedas give of the soul, 1/10,000th of the tip of a hair. It's tiny, like, but still we're maintaining this body, that infinitesimal spirit soul is activating, energizing the body, animating the body. But, you know, it's a very tiny particle of spirit. And so, you know, in that glorification, you know, we shouldn't become proud that, oh yes, I'm chanting Hare Krishna and, you know, I'm really relishing the glories of Krishna. But always understanding, it's such a, it's almost it's like a contradiction thing, where on one hand we're trying to glorify Krishna and on the other hand we're begging for his mercy. And so it's like, which is it? Is it, are we glorifying Krishna or are we begging for mercy? But it's actually, they're both there. It's like simultaneous. Because Krishna is so glorious, Krishna is full of all opulences, Krishna is so beautiful, unlimitedly beautiful, that in that glorification, when we're just, you know, so much in the mood of, you know, Krishna, you're so wonderful, then of course we want to serve that person. When someone is very great and magnanimous, like Lord Chaitanya is very magnanimous and so merciful and so compassionate and so loving, then of course you want to serve that person. You don't want to take anything from them. You just want to serve them and, you know, what can I do for you? In a very humble mood. So that glorification is actually also expressing that desire for service in the chanting. So we learn about the process of liberation, Prabhupada says, in the association of devotees. Then we take up Bhajana Kriya. And so I guess now, you know, we like to, we know the whole nine steps in devotional service, nine stages of devotional service. Bhajana Kriya, Anatta Nivritti, Nishta, Ruchi, Asakti, Bhava, Prema. So, you know, we hear about this and we're like, oh yeah, where am I at? La la la. Oh, maybe I'm at Nishta, maybe I'm at Ruchi. But, you know, how good to your bhajan? How good to your Bhajana Kriya? Sort of, you know, I know now I can understand, it's very easy just to, your bhajan can get disturbed and, you know, give up chanting or if you're not properly in association, not being very vigilant and diligent in our devotional practices. You know, by good practice of bhajan, then the anattas get removed. And there's a lot of anattas there. Prabhupada explains, Prabhupada's explanation of ruchi, you know, which is, of course, beyond nishta. So, he was explaining ruchi means you can't do without it, like a drunkard just can't live without drinking. For a devotee on the level of ruchi, then they just can't live without Krishna consciousness. So, you know, we can imagine to ourselves, oh yeah, I couldn't imagine being without Radha Balarupa or something. But it's probably not quite the case. We can live, you know, during the day we're not so concerned about Radha Balarupa. We're just busy doing our own things, in our mind, and it's very necessary that we take a honest appraisal of where we're at in devotional service. And sometimes Krishna is merciful and kind of gives us that vision where we actually are. And also shows us that, you know, we're talking about Krishna consciousness, but the best path for devotees in any stage really is to be attached to the guru and attached to the acharyas. This is much more, you know, meaningful and practical for us to be attached to the instructions of the spiritual master. You know, Prabhupada has told us to chant 16 rounds a day, follow the four regular principles. So it's best to stick to that and not just dream that, you know, I can become very advanced and dream that I can become very attached to Krishna. You know, meditate on Krishna's lotus feet 24 hours a day. No, we're not at that level. Most of us, more or less. So, best thing is to just, you know, very humbly take on the instructions of the spiritual master and, you know, make this our mission in life, just to become very fixed up in the process of Krishna consciousness and always try to have the association of devotees, keep ourselves in a Krishna conscious atmosphere. Like a friend was explaining to me, you know, when you're just, you know, like a tram full of people, no one else is thinking about Krishna or trying to think about attaining God consciousness or the process of devotional service. So that creates an atmosphere. There's a whole energy around people that they're in Maya, basically. They're just thinking about their bodies. They have no idea they're a spirit soul. So there's that whole energy everywhere in the world. So we have to create our own energy kind of space of our Krishna consciousness and have that, so it's like, as Prabhupada says, it will immunize us from Maya consciousness. So particularly through having good chanting, quality rounds, and then to protect ourselves, and then engaging in preaching. Krishna gives us that opportunity through service. We can have that opportunity to not completely forget Krishna. So I'll just leave it there. See if anyone has any comments, any questions about today's verse. Yes, Mahatma Guru.
Smokers, they're always thinking of drugs. Right?
Mm.
They can do anything just to get those drugs. They can do it. Like, I'll give you an example. In France, there were some robbers. They were robbing a bank. And they went right down to the gutters where there is so much of PC in the stool.
Yeah.
And they were taking money out from there.
Huh.
And through them, they went into the bank. So it is just like that. So if your consciousness is only for money, then you can do anything. So similarly, when we are Krishna conscious, then we always think of Guru Kani, divine popularization, and always think of glorifying Lord so that we can always become Krishna conscious, especially in the company of devotees. You know the example of Bharat Maharaj, how he lost his track, he had everything.
Mm-hmm.
So they could buy all the wealth, everything. Bhagavad is full of examples. So we have to be like the Amrish Mahal. All nine processes are excellent example. Thank you.
Thank you, Vivek. You have a question? Yes. Sorry?
Horoscope.
Horoscope, yeah.
Horoscope matching.
Yeah.
So the thing is, first of all, in devotees, it's a typical thing. And after that, when we want to go with the horoscope matching, the problem is there are sun signs, Yeah. The first slope, everybody is telling their own prediction.
Okay. You mean the problem of
getting the right,
chart? Yeah. Well,
can you just summarize?
I think what he's saying is that there's, you know, especially in India.
Astrology is different. Like, you know, for everybody is taking their own astrology.
Right. So yeah, there's so many astrologers that will give their different interpretations. Is that that's what you're saying, right?
Yes.
Yeah.
So how can we solve this problem?
Well. As Krishna says in Bhagavad Gita, that all the Vedas are meant for understanding Him. So including, you know, Jyotishastra, the knowledge of the science of the astrology is meant for ultimately understanding Krishna. So, you know, how to kind of make life go along, make the right decisions in life so that you can more easily go to Krishna. Like, life is very difficult, so you know, better to make wise decisions that will kind of smooth out your path through life, and you know, not regretting. Oh, why did I make this decision? Now I've made it so hard for myself. So you know, we want to go towards Krishna, if possible, as smoothly as possible. But there's always going to be bumps and everything along the road, and you know, we're always going to get diseases and everything. But so then from that we understand that we need to consult a devotee, you know, a devotee who's qualified to, you know, who understands the science of astrology. Yeah, because there's so many astrologers, and probably, you know, you'd wonder about their training, how they were trained in, just like I'm gonna do yoga teaching, but you know, there's like hundreds of yoga teachers nowadays, and many of them have just had, like, you know, done a 6-week course and called themselves a yoga teacher, and yeah. But a devotee, because devotee will have that, you know, material knowledge of astrology, but they'll also have devotional knowledge, so they can guide in that way. Yeah. See Gangesha Prabhu. He's qualified. Anything else? Yeah, we'll always be attached. Yeah. Okay, thank you very much. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki. Srila Prabhupada Ki.